Ronananian.
You've got to really be careful with Chinese tires. Are they built to the same standard? What's the success rate?
We're talking about the China Road. China Road. Whoa, whoa. Whoa. China Road.
The Car Doctor.
Dirt cheap is dirt cheap. You buy something cheap, you get what you buy.
Welcome to the radio home of Ronananian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Hey, welcome. Come on in. Sit down. Ronnie Nini and the Car Doctor at your service. Three bays all ready to go and wide open, ready to take care of your car and its problem here at 855-560-9900. The number again, 855-560-9900. 24/7, that number works. Sometimes it seems like that number works as hard as the Car Doctor. Maybe harder. But that number is there all the time because you can call 855-560-9900. Leave a message if we're not on the air. We've got a messaging service attached to it. We will call you back and get you in queue for the next live show, which are Saturday afternoons, 2 to 4 p.m. And I say that because some of you obviously podcast this radio show and take it from different sources, streaming and other places, the internet, and, you know, different than a brick-and-mortar radio station. And you can call that 855-560-9900 number. Leave a message. Or if you call during show hours, Saturdays, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, East Coast of the United States, and we can talk to you live here on air. How was your week? I don't know how my week was. It went by like, it was like, wow, look, it's Friday. Wow, look, it's Saturday. How did that happen? I was sitting at the deli yesterday, and I've got a lot of things to talk about, but I want to just bring this up real quick because I think Jimmy's right. I was at the deli yesterday morning in Franklin Lakes where I go for the Friday morning ritual, and there was seven or eight of us, the usual group of mechanics and mechanic wannabes and just tired people in general. And my friend Dirty Jim was sitting there, and Jimmy said, "You don't talk about the road to nowhere anymore, do you?" And I looked at him and I said, "The road to—" He goes, "Yeah. You know," and I had forgotten about the road to nowhere, and I had forgotten what that represented. And it sort of stuck in my brain for the last 24 hours because I think we all need a road to nowhere. I had forgotten what this concept was, and if you're new to this show and you don't know what it is, feeling stressed, aggravated, a lot going on. We got a big election coming up this week. Who knows where or what it's going to end up, how it's going to end up. I mean, good Lord, they're talking things in the paper. I was reading in the news today that they're talking about people stocking up on survival food because of the election for fear of disruption to the commerce system. So this thing has all of you wound up really tight. Here's how you're going to survive. Maybe this is the road to nowhere, how to survive the election Tuesday tip. Put down the cell phone, turn off the computer, gather up your family, and go get in the car. Go somewhere. Go take a ride. Go see the sights. Do nothing. Take an hour's ride to nowhere. Go somewhere for lunch. Make it a destination lunch or breakfast. We still got half a weekend left, right? I remember them as, with my father as a kid. My father's trips to nowhere were called, "We're going to Chuchistan, get in the car." I'm not sure where Chuchistan was, but I just know it was very far away, and I remember as a little kid, we never seemed to get there. Because I remember the conversation when my father would talk to my mother when they got home, and she'd go, "Well, where'd you go? I went to get milk. Where was that? Chuchistan." She goes, "Oh, that place again?" And I, you know, you could tell that there was a sense of hostility. Of course, when you're 7 years old, you kind of don't make that connection until you're older and you realize she's mad at him because he's out gallivanting around with the kids to Pennsylvania for milk on a Sunday morning. And, you know, but it's that road to nowhere. I forgot how much I enjoy taking car trips. I forgot how much I enjoy cars. And maybe that's part of it in that sense. You know, that's why I like working on them. Because there is something about just getting in a car and taking a ride going nowhere. No cell phone, no news on, just talking to your family, just kind of, oh yeah, that was my kid's middle name in the back seat. Now I kind of remember who that is. I think I'm going to do that tomorrow. Actually, tomorrow, Tomorrow's supposed to be nice here in the Northeast. I think tomorrow I'm going to take one of the last rides in the hot rod. It might be one of the first rides for the hot rod this season. I didn't get it out a whole lot. But I think I'm going to take a ride in the hot rod. I thought about this middle of the week. It would be a great Sunday to go take a ride and a cruise to nowhere and just kind of mind my P's and Q's in the afternoon and just kind of relax and unwind before Monday and it starts all over again. Because I know come Tuesday, whoever wins this election, whatever happens on Tuesday, I'll be glad I had Sunday and Monday before it of peace and quiet as much as I could make before the chaos and the you-know-what hits the fan. So maybe this wasn't so much of an automotive opening, but I just wanted to give you that piece of advice because, listen, we're like family, you and I. We talk about cars each and every week. We sit down. We have this conversation. How do we fix this? How do we fix that? This week, I wanted to give you a tip on how to fix you, all right? And I encourage you to take it. And if you want to see something different, just take a trip to nowhere. Maybe it could even be at night. My kids tell me one of their greatest childhood memories, and this came up in the conversation 2 weeks ago. We were gathered around the table, and they're telling me, hey, how come, do you remember when, and they started talking about, there's a local airport here called Teterboro. When you can go to Teterboro Airport, Teterboro, New Jersey, and sit at the end of the runway off to the side, or at least you could 15 years ago. And we would go down there in what was then the family station wagon, and we would watch the airplanes take off. And they would laugh and giggle and jump around and, you know, bounce over the seats. And it was the trip to Teterboro, the trip to nowhere that ended up at the airport. And it was kind of fun family stuff. And there was no computers. There was no media assaults. There was no yelling and screaming. No, maybe that's what we all need to do, take trips to nowhere and they could be part of it. Yes, Tom, you have a comment, sir.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, you can tell we're family here because, you know, the last time you took Tony and I for a drive, I remember you pulled over, turned around, and said, make me stop this car again.
Well, that's because you guys weren't wearing your seatbelts.
Well, we were wearing our car doctor shirts.
Oh, well. By the way, a tip of the wrench today to Dennis up on Facebook. He's down in Tennessee. He's a car doctor listener. And I got the post this morning. He's wearing his Car Doctor t-shirt and posted it to Facebook. He's down in Knoxville or Nashville or something. He's just enjoying ribs. And he says, I had to show the locals who the king of cars is. And you're my guy. So we appreciate that, Dennis, if you're out there listening today. But, yeah, just some wild and crazy stuff. I want to talk to you about a couple of things this hour and maybe next hour. The repair of the week this week was a real doozy. It was about a 98 Jeep Wrangler with a high idle problem that you won't believe what the fix is. So we're going to talk about that. We've got some phone calls I see lined up in the queue. I want to talk about some of the things that went on in the shop this week. But right now, let's pull over and take the pause. When we come back, we can hit it hard and we'll crank the garage doors wide open. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. Don't go away. I'm coming back right after this. Welcome back. Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor here. 855-560-9900 is the Car Doctor phone number. CarDoctorShow.com is the website along with podcast available for download and streaming. Tune in, iHeart, iTunes, all the good places, and Google Patch as well. Let's get over and talk to Peter, Sunapee, New Hampshire, 2007 Subaru, and some issues here. Peter, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hey, Ron, good to talk to you.
Thank you, sir.
Got a 2007 Subaru Outback. Had the head gaskets done, of course, about 150,000 miles. Have had catalytic converters done, the whole bit. And I've had a sort of a weird situation where I'm having some overheating issues where the coolant is backing up into the reservoir tank, and there's no leaks or anything like that. I did a water pump. Everything's nice and tight, but it's backing up into the tank, and I think it may be because I used some radiator sealant when I was having some leaking. And periodically I have to open up the radiator cap, put some more coolant into the radiator, and it runs okay, and then it backs up again into the reservoir. Then it spills out over there. So I'm at a complete loss. I haven't done compression tests on the cylinders to make sure that they're all okay, but the engine has good pep to it, so right. I don't think that there's anything there.
Right. Are you consuming any coolant, Peter?
It is consuming coolant, but I think that's because it's spilling out when it fills that reservoir tank
gotcha.
To the top because it
okay.
really does get up high.
Have you happened to replace the radiator cap at any point?
I have not, no.
Okay. Get your hands on. I'm going to give you a bulletin number. There's a bulletin okay. from Subaru 08-52-08. That's pretty common, and what that talks about is problems with the radiator cap itself. They talk about the radiator cap pressure valve being stuck open, or, and here's the or, which is what jiggled my brain when you said you put coolant sealer in there, debris getting sucked up into the tank hose and causing a clog and affecting the cap as well. So I'm wondering if you've got something as simple as a radiator cap issue. That bulletin talks in detail, and it applies to quite a few model year Subarus, and it talks about modifying the reservoir hose to a different length, and there's a bunch of information there that describes your problem to a T and some of the changes they want with regard to length of the hose and the bottle, as well as the cap itself. So it could be something as simple as that, and I would tell you, I would encourage you to go through that before you get anything, do anything any crazier. You know, so that's number one. Obviously, you know, you want to make sure you get yourself a good radiator cap. Stant would be fine. Get out to stant.com. You'll read more about it. As a matter of fact, Stant has a good bunch of information about radiator cap. I never realized until about 10 days ago we were doing something in the shop, and we were looking at a, I believe it was a Chevy Malibu, and we were looking at and the radiator cap on that was giving us an issue. And I never really stopped to look at how radiator caps are really complicated little critters. You think they're so simple, but they're not. And there's a lot of machining, and there's a lot of it's got to be the right tension spring and the right fabrication and manufacturing in order for it to work right. So just make sure if you put a radiator cap on it, you get a good one. Number one. Number two, as long as I've got you on the phone, you're up there in New Hampshire. Are you aware of the probability, possibility of brake line recall on that vehicle?
Yes, I am. Okay. It's been off the road for about a year now because of this problem. I've been thinking I'm going to take it all apart and see what I come up with. Because I do have some cool air coming out of one side of my heating vents. It's cooler than the other air.
Right.
I'm thinking maybe there's something there that's not allowing it to circulate all the way through.
Well, and listen, I'm not a fan of sealers in the in the cooling systems on Subarus. For some reason, Subarus do not like cooling system sealer. Subaru makes, and let me modify that statement. Subaru makes a specific sealer that they want you to use. I can't get proof of it, but it sure looks like Bars Leak. It sure smells like Bars Leak, but it's in a private Subaru branded bottle, and it makes no reference to being Bars Leak, the stuff that's been on the shelf for years and years and years. That being said, they want you to use it in judicious amounts, and you know, not necessarily the whole bottle at each service. Whenever you change the coolant on a Subaru, they want a bottle of this to go in. So, you know, depending upon what you used, yes, you may have created an issue. In which case, probably the first thing I would do is just try doing a mild reverse flush on the heater core. You know, hook up. You got access to a 5-gallon white bucket and two pieces of heater hose.
Sure do.
You know, and you know, I made up one. I've used it in the shop for years where I went to the hardware store, picked up a hose end so I can put a direct coupling, you know, a garden hose into it and just backflush the core into the bucket. And I backflush it into the bucket for two reasons. Number one, I like to dispose of the coolant properly. Number two, when I finally get it all clear and it's all water, the white bucket really makes, it's amazing how crud will stand out against the background of a white pail. So you'll really see, yeah, okay, look at the size of that. You know, that's pretty nasty. At least you know what you're trying to get out.
Sure, sure.
So,
well, it sounds like great advice.
Okay,
definitely,
sir.
That's my course of action. Yeah. Thanks, I appreciate it.
If you need more, you know where to find me. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you. Thanks for taking the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Let's go over and talk to JJ in New Haven, Connecticut. And it must be Subaru Day here on the Car Doctor.
Yeah, your second call, Dr. Ron. Thanks for taking my call.
And 07 Forester. What's going on here, JJ?
All of 80,000 miles. I had a tune-up several months ago, and I was told by the garage where I had the tune-up done that I was leaking power steering fluid, and they'd fix it for me for $400, and that I should be seeing it leaking. And it's been 4 or 5 months later. I've seen no sign of leaking, and the car's driving fine. I just need some advice.
Okay. First question is, do you trust the garage?
Great question. 50-50.
Yeah. So
it's not a Subaru dealer.
It's not, or it is?
It is not.
Okay. And listen, I'm not a fan that, you know, my perspective is just because somebody has Subaru over their doorway or Chevy or Ford or RA Automotive or whatever, it's a repair shop is only as good as the people inside the place. So it doesn't matter whether they're a dealer or an independent. There's dishonesty in, you know, in all forms and walks and occupations of life on this planet, it seems. My comment is, you know, if you're suspicious, see how they handle, hey, can you show me the leak? I brought somebody into the bay the other day, and I started showing her things, and she says, no mechanic's ever done this for me. And I went, well, you know, I want you to understand what we're up against and why we're looking at the car this way. And she walked out saying, you know, you really made me feel comfortable looking at the car. And that's sort of my job. It's not just there to fix the car. It's my job is supposed to be to sort of help fix the customer, to get you guys comfortable with what's going on. And,
sure.
And part of that is, if I can be on the soapbox for a second, not too long, you tell me when to get off, is if you think it's difficult understanding this generation of car, holy smokes, wait till the 2016 right. start coming out and sure. need to be repaired 10 years from now. You guys are going to be scratching your head going, my God, bring back a 2006. It was so much simpler. And they're complicated. So you can handle this one of two ways. Take it back to them and say, you know, I'm thinking about that power steering leak. Can you show me the leak? Can you show me where it's leaking? And see how they react to that. All right.
I love that strategy, yeah.
You know,
Ron, what, should I be feeling any kind of pull or tightness if, in fact, it was a leak?
Well, only if it was low enough on fluid, but your first reaction or your first indication, JJ, would be you'd get that, you know, power steering whine because there's air in the system. So, you know, do power steering pumps on Subarus go bad? I don't know. Is the sun going to come up tomorrow? If it does, it will. But, you know, it's and then you've got to have the conversation with them. Okay, whose power steering pump are they putting on it?
Right.
Because, you know, what kind of warranty is there? My experience has been that the majority of the power steering pumps being remanned in the aftermarket, there's only one or two good vendors, and the rest of them are just, I think they're doing it in their basement in their spare time after hours because they're clearly not professional in the way they're put together. So I would definitely compare pricing between buying a new pump out of Subaru, a remand pump from a reputable supplier that's going to give you the same warranty as the Subaru dealer and vice versa. You know, if somebody does a repair like that, it should come with a minimum of a year guarantee.
And, well, you are thorough. Just a follow-up. I'm garaging this in a month for 5 months.
Okay.
I should have this looked at before I do that?
Yeah, I would. Listen, don't you want to know that? I would have that looked at in a general overall look of the vehicle. Because when you garage it for 5 months and then take it out come, you know, April or March,
right?
You know, I would have another look and see, did anything deteriorate while it was sitting for 5 months?
Right.
You know, so this way at least you kind of know, all right? It's, you know, cars change in the blink of an eye and the conditions change in the blink of an eye. And then more importantly than that, if you still don't trust these guys after they can handle this, then you got to find a mechanic.
Do you make house calls?
I don't know. I got a lot going on right now, JJ. I'd love to, but, you know, the answer is yes, but no. We'll talk. Let me know what happens, JJ, and have some fun out there in the sun. I guess you're going to Florida for 5 months. That's why you're putting the car away. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Well, that was a quick first half of the show. Where the heck did that go to? So I'm making Tom smile. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. I'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, kind of rolling along this hour. By the way, what is it with Samsung, right? We're talking about recalls over the last couple of weeks, airbags. Now cell phones explode. Now washing machines explode. You know, are we just accepting of this? Are we just expecting everything to fail? And we just let these companies keep going on and on and on? How come this isn't like front page news? Everybody's rattling on about it. I remember 20 years ago when General Motors couldn't make a transmission to save their life. That's all we ever talked about. I don't know. I don't get it. You know, everybody seems to be making a crummy product, and everybody seems to be accepting of it. You know, it's maybe the future is just going back to juice can, two strings. Boy, they didn't explode. So, you know, it's maybe all this is hype just to keep us distracted from what's really going on. Let's get over and talk to Ed, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Ed, welcome to the Car Doctor. I'm just rambling a little bit today. How are you today, sir? What's going on?
Hi, I'm doing well. I have a 1995 Oldsmobile Cutlass Supreme SL 3.1 liter engine. And what's going on is after driving it for a little while, when I stop at a red traffic light idling, the car starts sputtering. It sounds kind of like, reminds me of one of those Harley Davidson motorcycles. It goes bup, 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 bup. And my tachometer meter it's at one, it'll start bouncing down, and then it actually does stall. And then when I try to immediately try to crank it back up, I get the red dash lights come on. The dash lights come on, but there's no crank at all. But interestingly, if I wait like 3 minutes right there at the intersection, I turn the key and it cranks right up, really strong crank, boom, it goes right off and I'm on my way.
Okay.
And then for the next few lights or whatever, I have to put it in a neutral and give it gas, you know, when it starts sputtering so it doesn't stall. That seems to help prevent the stalling, but then I'm throwing it in neutral, giving it gas, and then coming off the light and everything, so I'm perplexed at what's going on.
Belching any black smoke, Ed?
No, that's fine. I have a theory that maybe it's there's a plastic insulation over some of the wiring, maybe gone, and it's grounding somewhere, shorting out.
Well,
somewhere.
You know, before we, it almost sounds like you may have two problems. So let's talk about the no crank condition first. All right.
Uh-huh.
The no crank condition. This car should have pass lock too. If you look at the ignition key, does it have a little black chip in the key?
Definitely does. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So that's pass lock two. Pass lock two was General Motors' idea that somebody would want to steal this car, which I guess when it was new, maybe it was something they wanted to steal, and they put an anti-theft chip in there so that would keep the vehicle from cranking, and put it into a no start condition if somebody tried to bypass the security system. So, mm-hmm. Does the car have tilt wheel?
I don't think so.
No tilt column?
Let me think about this. I've never used it because I'm not going to drive it. I think
it has it, but you never use it, right?
It does have it. Yeah,
okay.
It does have it because
What one of the ways we used to test to see if this was a pass lock problem, and it's not completely accurate, but it's a good side of the road sort of test, is take the tilt. And the next time it goes into a no start, no crank, take the tilt and change the position of the column, high, low, because what you're doing is you're flexing the wires. And if the wires themselves inside the column have a connection or a fray or a looseness issue, bouncing them around will change that. And if while you're doing that, it starts or it cranks, that tells us we've got a problem up in the top of the column.
Okay.
All right. If you were to go to the base of the steering column, there are two very thin, kind of like piano wire, white wires in a separate connector. All right. Those are the two wires leading up that the theft module reads the resistance of the key when you put it into the cylinder. So what happens is Ed comes along, puts his key in the ignition switch. There is a device in the ignition switch that allows it to transmit the resistance value of that chip down the wires to the theft module. The theft module goes, okay, it's Ed, and not somebody with a screwdriver trying to steal the car. And it then gives the okay signal to the PCM to allow it to crank and run the injectors. All right? So, that's the first thing. A lot of people at this point in the game bypass that system. All right? Simply by, and I think I can talk about this on air because I don't think anybody stealing a 95 Olds is probably at the top of anybody's list at this point. But what they'll do is they will take a resistance value reading off the key. Take a digital volt ohm meter, measure the chip. Each side of that chip has a little piece of metal sticking out of it. Put an ohm meter across the chip and you'll get a resistance value. Go to the base of the column, unplug the connector there, go to Radio Shack, get yourself a resistor, plug it into that harness. It'll think that it's got the right resistance all day long and start the car. All right. It'll require the key still, but at least you bypass that module. Now, what that does is that bypasses the potential of broken wires up inside the column. All right.
Okay.
That doesn't allow if the module or the wiring from the bottom of the column over to the module have a fault in them. Does that make sense?
I think so. You're trying to bypass that chip by
right.
Am I basically these two white piano wires you mentioned
right.
coming out?
Right. You're trying
I'm putting. I'm putting a Radio Shack resistor between those.
Right. You're trying to put a resistor across those wires. You're trying to duplicate what the key would normally send down as a signal.
Okay.
So at that point, you're bypassing the ignition switch and the two white wires that might be broken up inside the column.
What What kind of resistor do I get? So you think? Well, I go to Radio Shack and tell them.
Yeah, tell them what you're looking for. A resistor that's got 1.8 ohms or 2 ohms or 2.2 ohms. It's not a lot of wattage here. It doesn't require a lot. All right. So you know what? If you went out to YouTube, I haven't done this in a long time because we haven't seen too many. They're 21 years old now, but I'm sure out on YouTube, somebody's got a how to bypass your GM pass 2 key system and install the resistor chip. So that eliminates that.
Okay.
Should allow starter enable, all right, because the PCM did have authority to prevent the starter from cranking on those vehicles. That should allow starter enable. After that, it gets a little bit more involved looking to see, do we have starter enable? You need a scan tool to look at a few things. So that's the first half of this conversation. That's that side of the table. All right?
Okay.
I don't think that's going to fix your stall problem. What I want to know about your stall condition is, I think about fuel pressure regulators going bad. What is this, the 3.1 or the 3.4? Which engine is this?
3.1.
Okay. So I think about fuel pressure regulators going bad. And burping fuel, the diaphragms go bad, they get porous, and there's issues there. So do we have a problem with fuel causing this to stall, and then subsequently you have this pass 2 key system? Because I'm thinking everything's 21 years old here. Everything, is kind of on the ragged edge in terms of age and condition. Could we have a pressure regulator, a fuel system pressure regulator going south, causing it to flood out potentially, giving us a stall condition, and then the pass key gives us a no start. Once you get it to the point of starting or cranking, it's got to crank, all right? Because the logic is what happens under the hood won't keep it from cranking. It's still got to crank, all right? It's just like any car where if on an older car, if you pulled the coil wire out, it would crank all day long, but the spark goes nowhere, so it'll never start. The car's got to crank. The car doesn't crank, we're going to fix the cranking problem first. And if you still have the problem, then we'll talk, is it a fuel pressure regulator? Is it an idle air control valve getting hung up, not able to idle properly? Is it a map sensor issue? What is it? Let's do the pass lock 2 issue first. Let's solve that so at least it cranks every time, and then we can talk about the rest if we need to. All right, sir?
Okay. The one thing someone had suggested, maybe the battery. It seems the battery will short out and cause the engine to stall and not crank. I mean, is there somehow the battery itself will cause a short in the system?
Well, I always would start a good diagnosis, and it's a good point to bring up. I would always start a good diagnosis on these cars by doing a full load test on the battery and making sure the cables themselves are good, clean, and tight, not just at the battery, but also down at the starter where the positive lug comes in, and also at the engine block where the negative cable comes into the ground.
Okay.
So, yes, battery connections and battery itself. Have I ever seen a battery cause one of those cars to stall? I saw those cars do a lot. I can't recall a battery causing it to stall. I have seen an alternator cause those cars to stall, and that's a slightly different conversation. But, before I start reaching for the stars, I'd rather just let's go with the basics. So, yes, battery, cables, connection, cleanliness. And then take a look at pass lock, too.
Great.
All right?
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
You're very welcome. Good luck to you, Ed. I'm sorry. And not Ed. And let us know what happens from there. 855-560-9900. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, coming back. I'm running late. Don't go away. Welcome back. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor. 855-560-9900 is the phone number. Let's go over and talk to Bill Woodbridge in New Jersey. Some questions about a 2010 F-150. Bill, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hey, Ron. How you doing?
Good. What's going on?
The first question is, I was doing some research on replacing my air filter.
Okay.
And they said that K&N is supposedly preferable than a regular air filter. Are you familiar with them?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I've got K&Ns in the majority of family vehicles. I'm trying to think. I don't think I have a vehicle that doesn't have a K&N filter in it.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah.
It said it would even improve your performance a little bit.
Yeah, what it does is, what K&N filters do is they help clean up the airflow, in a sense. It's a better-made filter. It's a more evenly made filter in the sense of air passing through it, so there's less turbulence and it's smoother airflow. Think of water in a stream bed and how that reacts to pebbles and rocks, and it's less disruptions to flow, so it's smoother, it's more efficient. And the other win is that you'll no longer have an air filter to throw away. You'll be just cleaning it, every how many miles and reusing it for the life of the vehicle. Second question.
They said something about oiling it, too. I don't know if it's pre-oiled when you buy the original one, or do you oil it after you clean it?
No, when you buy the original one, it does come pre-oiled, all right? And then, you know, you'll need a little, they call it an air filter or an air charger kit or a filter charger kit. Then you purchase one of those, and then, you know, typically, again, how much you drive every 15, 20,000 miles. Sometimes we do them every 30,000 miles, but it's you do have the option of cleaning it whenever you want.
Okay, good. And one other question.
Sure.
I have a 2010 F-150 with a 5.4 liter.
Right.
And I used Mobile One, and I noticed that I, after about, I guess about 2,500 miles, I was down a quart of oil. I have about 34,000 miles in a vehicle. And it just seemed like a lot to use. I don't know if it's a common problem with the Fords, or if you agree with that.
They accept it. I don't agree with it in the sense that it's acceptable, but Ford says a quart every 1,000 miles. The majority of car companies today accept
it. Is that right?
Yeah, the majority of car companies are saying a quart every 1,000 miles. And the thing that gets me is, you know, okay, so a quart of oil is cheap. Never mind the annoyance, and, you know, it's their way of saying, hey, we built a piece of junk and just accept it. But I wonder what that does long term to oxygen sensor and catalytic converters, because obviously the exhaust is passing out the tailpipe and it's leaving oil residue in the exhaust. It's got to be. So, you know, it's the car gets to 140,000 miles and all of a sudden it needs a catalytic converter. And you say to yourself, is it just worn out, or is it because it's been burning a quart of oil every 1,000 miles or 2,000 miles in your case? And has that shortened the life of the cat? And it sure has the potential where it would do that.
So, yeah, you know, because with the vehicle, I generally don't even bother to check them. You know, they didn't seem like they ever use oil in between oil changes.
Right.
And I don't see it smoking, or, you know, it's not noticeable.
Well, you won't. Yeah. You won't see any modern vehicle smoke, really, because the catalytic converter's, you know, swallowing all of it, and it's trying it's oxidizing it down, and you know, it's having its catalytic reaction. So, but you know, yeah, that's acceptable. Welcome to the world of new cars.
Yeah, okay. Hey, I really appreciate it. I'm going to go out. I'm going to buy the K&N.
Great. Good deal, Bill. You have a good rest of the weekend.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. We're coming back right after this. Welcome back. Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. More information, cardoctorshow.com. Keep in mind that phone number is 24-7, 855-560-9900. Call, leave a message. We'll call you back and get you in the lineup for the next live show. Let's get over to our last call of the hour. Frank from Congers, New York. I notice I'm finishing out the hour with Frank every week now the last couple of weeks, but that's okay. I like Frank. Frank, what's going on?
It doesn't make it a bad thing, my man. How are we doing?
Not at all. Yes, sir. Very good. Very good. What's cooking?
Okay, let's get right to the subject. 2001 Honda Civic. One of the family members has the car. Gets a recall on the airbags. Brings it in. They do the recall. Everything's fine. 3 months down the road, the main sensor board in the car goes, brings it back over, finds out that Honda's the only one that can do it. They're the only ones that have the software to turn around, and Honda tells the family member it's going to cost $1,000 to replace it and put it all back together. And if you don't do it, it's a safety hazard because it controls your airbags, controls your seatbelt, and everything in the car.
Right.
If you get in an accident, it's your fault. How do you like that one?
So what you're saying is you don't like the fact that the car manufacturers now have a proprietary hold over the majority of vehicles on the road today, and they control the market. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Had a local dealership. I looked up the part. I know what the part cost. It was half that price. And, of course, when you go to a dealership, you're paying the amount of money for that mechanic. Okay. Understandable. But here you are, you're going to recall, and there's articles coming out in magazines and books saying that by doing the recall, it's blowing the board. They're saying it's not, and it's the customer's responsibility.
We have a customer.
2001.
We have a customer at the shop.
$1,000 to do that?
Nah, we have a customer at the shop with a 2002 Civic that went through the airbag recall, and she's been back to Honda 3 times because ever since, and I wonder what's going on here, and that explains some of it, that ever since now, they've been throwing seatbelts at the car, they've been throwing modules at the car. It seems like they've got a problem that nobody wants to talk about. But yeah, valid points, Frank. Hey, listen, wait till you get to a 2016 car and there's 114 modules on board and dealers are the only ones that can handle it. And if we let the industry get away from us like it slowly is, that's going to be the future. And in a very short period of time, 4 or 5 years from now, yeah, dealers will be the only ones fixing cars. But Frank, listen, don't worry about it, because the majority of people are only worried about what's on their cell phone, what they're looking at, and not necessarily about the car. I'm Ron Anani and the Car Doctor. Till the next time, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.